we do not tolerate this behavior in our community in Alaska.
The legislature strengthens the sex trafficking law. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, April 19th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, remembering Nome Native leader Charlie Johnson.
At times he could walk into a room of dignitaries and command their attention, but he never let anybody he ever met feel less than he was.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. The Association of Alaska School Boards promotes one-to-one digital learning for all Alaska students to prepare them for success in the global economy. More information at aasb.org. This message sponsored by the Association of Alaska School Boards.
The 34-year-old man accused of kidnapping and killing Samantha Koenig from an Anchorage coffee shack has pleaded not guilty to all charges. Israel Keyes entered his pleas through his lawyer in U.S. District Court today in Anchorage. A grand jury yesterday indicted Keyes in the death of Samantha Koenig. Keyes pleaded not guilty to charges of kidnapping resulting in death, receiving and possessing ransom money, and debit card fraud. Prosecutors believe that Keyes abducted Koenig on the evening of February 1st, just as she was preparing to close the coffee shack for the day, and then killed her the next morning. If convicted, Keyes could be sentenced to life in prison or death. The House and Senate have finished one-third of the items on the agenda for the special session that began yesterday. Members expected fast action on the bill strengthening the state's laws against sex crimes. It passed both bodies with no opposition. The Senate passed the measure first today, and later the House concurred with a single five-word change to the bill they had passed during the regular session. That change on the Senate floor made human trafficking illegal within the state. And Anchorage Republican Liesl McGuire said the entire bill was directed at protecting children.
Our most valuable resource are our children, and if we don't protect their souls and their spirits, we don't have anything.
The bill recognizes children as victims by not immediately classifying them as prostitutes. It also cracks down on forced prostitution, on pornography, and it makes having sex with an underage person a felony instead of a misdemeanor.
We do not tolerate this behavior in our community in Alaska. We don't tolerate preying on our most innocent victims. And if you are out there listening, we are going to come get you. And these are just the first series of laws. They're going to go on and on and on in our Choose Respect campaign.
The bill drew no opposition in either the House or the Senate and now goes to the governor for his action. The Senate has begun learning about the bill setting up the development of a gas pipeline from the North Slope to South Central and the Rail Belt. The measure passed the House last month and had two hearings in its first committee of referral during the regular session. A rewritten version returned today for the first time during the special session. And sponsors focused on explaining the need for many of the elements the Senate had eliminated. In particular, Anchorage Republican Mike Hawker, one of the co-sponsors, wanted to give the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation the ability to complete the project without any future action by the legislature. He explained that possible shippers and customers will be more comfortable if they know it would not be a political issue.
You know, we're 60 legislators in this building. We all have provincial interests to represent. We are essentially obligated when a project comes forward. If it's not the one that absolutely benefits me to the greatest degree possible, I'm obligated to challenge it. But where we have an agency that has a more broader mission to serve all the state of Alaska, we really believe that can serve to insulate proper economic, best business practice management decisions from the inevitable politics of this building.
With the ability to keep working rather than waiting for legislative approval along the way, Hawker says the projects could be out for an open season where the corporation would look for customers by next year. And it is projected to deliver gas to market in 2018. At the end of the regular session, legislators adopted a bill to extend a film tax credit incentive program for 10 years. It will be funded at $200 million over 10 years, starting in 2013. It adds to incentives created in 2008, so film companies will be able to get a base 30% tax credit for expenditures in Alaska, with additional credits for local hire, films made in rural Alaska, and during the off-season. KNBA's Jacqueline Estes has more.
As set up by legislators in 2008, the Film Incentive Program now allows filmmakers and producers to get tax credits for up to 44% of expenditures in Alaska. Senate Bill 23 would allow them to get tax credits for 58% or more of expenditures. Bob Crockett is president of the Alaska Film Group, a trade association with about 100 members. He applauds the extension of the program and several changes outlined in the bill.
It calls for more transparency, which we support. It calls for more Alaska business ground spend. It calls for more Alaskans to be working on film projects. They basically doubled the incentive from 10% to 20% as an incentive for Alaska crew positions.
Industry representatives say it's not uncommon for as much as half of a film's budget to go into pay for the producers, directors, screenwriters, and major actors, so-called above-the-line expenditures. Senate Bill 23 limits tax credits to 5% of above-the-line costs, but allows an increase of half the cost of expenditures paid to local residents, an idea new to Crockett.
I like the concept where you tie above the line numbers to how much local hire is spent, how much on local hire wages, and how much money is spent on Alaskan businesses. I think that's a healthy concept. How it actually plays out for above the line is something that we'll have to work through and see if it works.
Wasilla Republican Representative Anna Fairclough was a member of a House Finance Subcommittee that held several hearings and authored many of the changes to Senate Bill 23. She says she voted against the film tax credits legislation in 2008 and took this opportunity to address her concerns, one of them being about content.
If 90% of the revenues that Alaska receives are from development, such as oil and gas exploration or mining, we wouldn't want something, a movie, to display us in an inappropriate way or to shut down Alaska being able to provide that benefit to our people.
Fairclough says the solution is to create a commission to review tax credit applications and scripts. That commission will be made up of the heads of the Departments of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, Natural Resources, Revenue, and Labor and Workforce Development. In deciding whether to approve a tax credit application, they'll consider a film's effects on job prospects, the Alaska economy, and public perception of state policy on natural resource development. Senate Bill 23 also shifts part of the program from the Division of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development to another state agency. Juanetta Ayers is director of the Division of Commerce.
We'll plan a smooth transition where the incentive review and award process is moved to the Department of Revenue, and the Department of Commerce continues to be involved in the promotion of Alaska as a film location and working on production coordination and connecting Alaskan businesses and workers to those job opportunities that come up.
Senate Bill 23 next goes to the governor for his consideration. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, record ice conditions hamper the crab fleet in the Bering Sea.
We can't get to where we need to get to, so it's just the way it is, I guess.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
And by
Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
The Alaska Volcano Observatory says a brief eruption at Cleveland Volcano in Alaska's Aleutian Islands sent up an ash cloud that quickly dissipated. Geophysicist Dave Snyder says the cloud rose as high as 15,000 feet and dissipated in about 2 minutes. He says the cloud was not a hazard to aviation. Schneider says the explosion at 4:38 a.m. Thursday was similar to small events at Cleveland Volcano since December. Those explosions created ash clouds that dissipated quickly and did not affect air traffic. Cleveland Volcano is a 5,675-foot peak on an uninhabited island 940 miles southwest of Anchorage. Scientists detected the explosion based on seismic information recorded at stations at nearby volcanoes. Record-breaking ice in the Bering Sea continues to take a toll on the snow crab industry. Crabbers, processors, and regulators met last week to discuss the possibility of extending the season. As KUCB's Stephanie Joyce reports, the inability to forecast the ice has everyone frustrated.
Last week marked a new low point for the Bering Sea snow crab fleet. With sea ice covering most of the fishing grounds and more than half of the fleet tied up in harbor, boats only managed to deliver 1.5 million pounds of crab. That's the lowest weekly delivery so far in what's already been an unusually slow season. Although fishing did pick up over the weekend, the surge in activity might be short-lived. The extended forecast is calling for ice to cover the entire Bering shelf, including most of the crab grounds, by the end of the week. That doesn't bode well for crabbers harvesting the remaining third of the snow crab quota by the time the season ends on May 31st. One possibility discussed at last week's meeting was extending the snow crab season into June. Crabbers have been pushing the idea for several months now, but processors are less enthusiastic, and Fish and Game is waiting to see how things play out.
Our first option would be to try to have the season done by the end of May.
Shellfish biologist Wayne Donaldson says Fish and Game is concerned that extending the season will interfere with the snow crab molting and mating period. They're also worried that it could affect the overfished tanner crab species. But Donaldson stresses that any extension is purely hypothetical at the moment.
We're still in the monitoring mode, just assessing the ice reports as they come out 3 times a week, trying to keep a handle on what the weekly harvest rate is. We still hold out some hope, although that hope seems to be diminishing weekly, that we could take the tack by the end of May.
The forecast isn't promising. National Weather Service ice forecaster Kathleen Cole says the long-term outlook is for ice covering the fishing grounds until mid-May. And she says even that might be optimistic.
I will update this, at the beginning of next month. And as I look at it now, I see some areas where I think I've maybe gone a little bit too far. But I also see some where I think, I may not have gone enough. In fact, the last ice to St. Paul is one that I'm thinking I probably may need to extend that one.
That uncertainty makes the crab fleet nervous. As one crabber said at last week's meeting, it's hard to catch crab if you're constantly running from the ice.
So we're hoping all we need is some southerly winds and a sustained southerly wind. But right now, the next week doesn't look very productive. So unfortunately, we're home spot here as far as fisher. We can't get to where we need to get to. So it's just the way it is, I guess.
The uncertainty for crabbers won't be resolved for another few weeks. Fish and Game has said it won't decide until at least the end of the month whether to extend the snow crab season. Reporting in Unalaska, I'm Stephanie Joyce.
The city of Nenana could get $75,000 if the governor signs off on the finalized capital budget bill. The money will go toward a study that would line out the benefits and pitfalls associated with creating a new borough or incorporating the interior community into an existing borough. KUAC's Emily Schwing reports.
Nearly 380 people live within Nenana's city limits, but it doesn't lie within the boundaries of any of Alaska's 18 boroughs. The city itself does levy its own property taxes, and it manages its own school district.
Nenana is like the last of the communities of old Alaska.
Jason Mayrand has served as Nenana's mayor for 11 years. Mayrand says arguments about organizing the city into a borough have come up often during his tenure as mayor.
Every 3 or 4 years or so, it kind of pops up and there's a few meetings about it, and eventually it just kind of fades away. And we're kind of in one of those cycles again right now, but I think there's a little bit more consideration to see if it's something that we really want to do.
As far as Mayrand sees it, the $75,000 study will explore five options for Nenana. The community can remain as is, or it can be annexed by either the Denali or Fairbanks North Star Borough. They could join the Yukon-Koyukuk Borough, or establish a new borough, which may include communities like Tanana, Minto, and Manly. Peter Verhagen is an aide for Representative Alan Dick of House District 6. He's lived in Nenana since 1986. He says all five options have serious socioeconomic impacts.
If one of our neighboring boroughs was to annex us, how much involvement would community members be able to have in what happens? You know, Nenana's a pretty split community as far as Native and white, but an awful lot of people consider it a village. And there's a lot of connections between our community and Nenana and Minto and Tanana and up and down the Tanana and the Yukon rivers.
There are no details about who will lead the study or how it will be conducted. Mayor Mayrand says he expects the whole process to take between 5 and 7 years. The governor hasn't yet signed off on the money, which is included in next year's fiscal year capital budget. In Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
Tourism officials aren't sure what type of a season to expect this summer. Numbers have been up and down since peaking in 2008 and then tanking the next year with the recession. Fairbanks Convention and Visitors Bureau Director Deb Hickok says varying sectors of the market have performed erratically in the years since.
A couple of years, we saw a surge of international. We saw some downturn in cruise, which is now on the up and up. And then we saw a continued downtown and highway. So it's been a mixed bag for us and very challenging environment.
Hickok says interior businesses have largely weathered the tough years, but she's cautious about the future.
I always refuse to predict because it really... We have so many different sectors that make up tourism in our community, but we think definitely the cruise will be on the upswing. We'll see a return of princesses returning a ship to the Gulf of Alaska cruises, so that will show a little uptick. The verdict's still out on the independent, the international. We're just not sure how that's all going to pan out this summer.
Hickok provided an update to the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce. Among information shared were statistics that showed Fairbanks ranked 8th among Alaska communities in terms of overall visitation and 3rd as an overnight destination with an annual direct economic impact of $115 million.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. And by First National Bank Alaska, offering business solutions to help Alaska's dreams grow for 90 years. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC.
You can find APRN headlines and more online at alaskapublic.org. Local, national, and international news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. AlaskaPublic.org, connecting you to Alaska, one story at a time.
A longtime Alaska Native leader and executive director of the Nanook Commission died recently. Charlie Johnson, an Inupiat from the Nome area, passed away on April 12th. He was 72. Johnson's list of accomplishments and titles stretches across decades. He was a former chair of the Alaska Federation of Natives, as well as a former leader of Kowarik and the Bering Straits Native Association. He is being remembered by friends and co-workers as a man who worked tirelessly for Native issues, but also stayed deeply involved with his family. Nanook Commission Deputy Director Jack O'Miluk and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service biologist Susie Miller sat down to talk about their colleague and friend. Miller says Johnson built the Nanook Commission.
But I think more importantly, he was a very strong advocate for co-management and decision-making abilities and involvement of Alaska Natives in issues that related to marine mammals and, in this case, in polar bears.
His vision was that the decisions and the choices that we made on behalf of the subsistence users of Alaska would have impacts far beyond just Alaska. And one of the cases in point would be our native-to-native agreement with the natives of Chukotka. His vision was to really bring some democracy to the other side.
Would you describe him as a born scientist? He had degrees in math and business administration, but certainly he was involved in a lot of science issues. Did that seem a natural role for him?
Yeah, I think he was a very analytical thinker, and for that reason, he was an advisor to people within the Fish and Wildlife Service and also other groups like the Inuit Circumpolar Conference, the Arctic Science Research Commission, and many others.
He understood that science was a tool, and he was able to marry it very well with sort of his political influence and his broader vision.
What impact did he have on marine mammal and subsistence issues in Alaska?
He brought, I think, a true ability or shared responsibility for Alaska Natives to be in a decision-making role for issues that affect the Bering Chukchi Sea's polar bears through establishment of a four-party commission that involved both a federal and a Native representative from Russia and from the U.S., together to make decisions about how polar bears are managed in that region.
One of the things that I learned pretty quickly after working with him was that there was always a solution. And he was very quick to identify issues that may become a problem in the future or issues that were unaddressed. And that was sort of naturally what led him to get involved in marine mammal management. And very early it was clear that he sort of had an unconventional method. He was able to identify things and then provide solutions.
Do either of you have a favorite story, or both of you perhaps have a favorite story that you'd like to share about Charlie?
Well, it's not so much a story, but just an honor. Back in 2001, when my daughter was born, he was the one who gave her her Eskimo name, Ikituk, and that was a great honor to me and my family.
The thing that I think about most was Charlie was genuinely compassionate. He was a very, very nice man. At times, he could walk into a room of dignitaries and command their attention, but he never let anybody he ever met feel less than he was. He welcomed everybody with a smile, a laugh, a handshake, a hug, and then he'd tell a story. One of his messages that he used to like to relay to me was, always let everybody leave with their dignity.
Wildlife biologist Susie Miller and Jack O'Meelock remembering their friend and colleague, Charlie Johnson. More than 800 people gathered in Hangar 3 on the Coast Guard base for the memorial honoring Petty Officer First Class James Hopkins and retired Chief Petty Officer Richard Belisle yesterday. Hopkins and Belisle were found dead in one of the buildings at Communications Station Kodiak by co-workers. KMXT's Jennifer Canfield went to the memorial and created this audio postcard.
Any time that somebody dies unexpectedly, it leaves a lot of unanswered questions, and especially in this one where you have the questions of what happened, how could it happen, and why. Why did it happen? Why? And that's really an unanswerable question. I don't know if you can prepare for it, but you try to help people, allow them to ask the question, allow them to reflect on the question. You say, you bring it, when you voice the question, you bring to focus or attention something that people have been struggling with.
We gather here today to pay tribute to ET1 James Hopkins and Mr. Rich Blythe. Our thoughts and prayers are with their families as they go through this very difficult time.
Today, I represent our 24th Commandant of the United States Coast Guard, Admiral Robert J. Patton. and I speak as the first flag officer in the chain of command for these two fallen shipments. Jim and Rich were cherished members of our Coast Guard family, and I again extend deepest condolences to the Hopkins and Belisle families on behalf of Secretary Napolitano, Admiral Papp, and all members of Team Coast Guard. To the families, we are with you. To the community of Kodiak, we are with you. We are with you in our shock, in our anger, our determination for justice. Know that Alaska stands with you in our prayers. You live the lives that make us all proud to be Alaskans. The beauty of this place, this gem of the ocean, this Emerald Isle, reminds us as the Creator promises us in Scripture, that fear will pass away and love endures forever. God bless us all. God, look after the souls of these fallen and their families. And Godspeed to the United States Coast Guard.
That was an audio sound portrait from the memorial service for the two men who were killed on the Kodiak Coast Guard base last week. And finally tonight, a correction. Last night, in a story about the population growth of the eastern stellar sea lion, we reported this would be only the second time an animal has been taken off the endangered species list due to recovery. In fact, a total of 25 endangered species have officially recovered. It would be the second time an animal under the jurisdiction of the National Marine Fisheries Service would be removed from the list. We apologize for the error. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Jacqueline Estes in Anchorage, Stephanie Joyce in Unalaska, Emily Schwing and Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Jennifer Canfield in Kodiak. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
Alaska Housing Finance Corporation offers competitive interest rates with programs tailored for first-time homebuyers and home choice seminars that cover the details of purchasing and financing a home. There's more information at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
When you've made the decision to stop smoking, whether you've tried to quit before or it's the very first time, there are free and confidential resources available proven successful in helping you quit for good. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line offers nicotine replacement therapy, confidential counseling, and support services. Because everyone is different, trained quit coaches will tailor a quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.